seen a little bit of a taste of, and we'll talk about it in a little bit more detail next week. It's really a fascinating Shas Sugya, and it's one really, if you have to pick one place that's really the mucker, really second parak of Ksubis is probably its most home-based kind of source. So for us to be in this parak and not talk about Migo wouldn't be so appropriate. So hopefully the beginning of next week we'll get a little bit more of a head-on treatment of Migo. What we wanted to do first, like we said yesterday, is to get a little bit of a sense more directly of Hapesh Asar and how that fits in. And in order to do that, we have to say a few words about Migo. We have to kind of get the topic rolling, but we'll look at Migo more directly next week. You may recall that I left you with a question yesterday, important, a practical question. So did you give any thoughts to this question? And I told you a story that happened, that I was giving oral bechinas 2 years ago when we were learning Bav Metzia, and Migo was one of the topics. And as I finished the bechina, I let the Talmud go. I said, okay, we're finished. And he said, really? No questions about Migo? So my question to you was, should he now be given credit for knowing about that subject, Migo, the Iboy Shosik? And I said, if he wanted to, he didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to bring up the whole subject. So should we say Pesha Asar? Should we say Migo, the Iboy Shosik? What do you think about that? It's a question that sounds a little bit cutesy, which I guess it is, but it's relevant a little bit to understanding the sugya. So, what do you think? If you were the teacher, how would you factor that in? Kiva, you look like you have a thought about it.
You could pick a part of the case and say there was no, at that point when she had finished, there was no realistic possibility that you were going to ask him.
Ah, so you think maybe it was a cynical exploitation of the whole
Not necessarily
ego.
A cynical exploitation, but just because he asked it at the end does not necessarily mean that he knew, does not necessarily ask him about it, or that there was a realistic possibility that happened.
He
just meant that he was surprised that
Migo. So you're saying there are certain situations where we can minimize the significance of what he's saying, and this is one of them, because it's unlikely that that was going to really open the door to anything, and therefore maybe we shouldn't bring the whole weight of, or shouldn't give him the whole weight of Migo.
I guess in a similar if in questioning the witness, after they finish questioning him, he says, you weren't going to ask me what time it was?
Okay, so that's an interesting question. So then should we, therefore... So that question you're talking about in terms of the drisha of the chakira, there was not about the substance of his edus, in terms of the questions that we ask in order to clarify that he's really legit, and that he really knows what he's talking about. So should we credit him with knowing the answer, whatever credit that's worth, so to speak, if he brings up the issue himself? So is that comparable? I'm not sure. It's interesting. So basically what I'm looking for here, I mean, you could say a lot of things, but what this illustrates is possibly a few things. One is that when it comes to Migo, and we'll discuss this more next week, there is a major dispute as to how far we go with Migo, how much power Migo has, or what's the appropriate usage of Migo. But one idea that many Rishonim assume, it's not the only view, again, we'll see this in more detail, but one premise that many assume is that Migo is really a defensive tool. That essentially, if I come to you with a taina, you owe me money, and you say a claim, and it's not your best claim, there are better claims, so then, Migo could help you. But the idea that Migo should get you anything, what might be called Migo Lahotzi, right? Migo, which might mean the fact that Migo would have to go up against Chazaka, or might mean just the fact that Migo should accomplish anything active at all, as we'll see, is a little bit of a question. All right.
Can we say that he has a Chazaka of knowing the answers to the test?
So now you want to open up the topic in general about the whole question of just how should we use principles of Nemunis to evaluate oral bechinas in general. It's a fair question, but you're saying, basically, I think what you're getting at though is he gaining by answering, or would he be losing by not answering? Right, I hear that. Okay.
He's not giving you any new information.
Right. It's hard to say that he'd be losing anything because they didn't ask him the question, right? So he didn't really have, he doesn't have to protect any kind of a chazaka here. It seems like this could have been considered a effort to score points. He should basically do better because he expressed his knowledge of the subject of Migo and he didn't actually express it, he just volunteered, so therefore he should be credited with it. So that's one question we want to try to figure out when it comes to Migo. Is Migo something that actually can accomplish anything on your behalf? Or is it really just a defensive tool? And if that's the case, then it's not going to help him so much. He wasn't on the hot seat, he didn't ask him any questions about Migo, so it's not like he needed any defense, so maybe the whole point is irrelevant. Can you add a comment?
Mm-hmm.
Migo or Peshasser?
Migo.
Uh-huh, okay.
Really, I guess both. But it's not like you wouldn't have known what Migo was if he hadn't told it, if he hadn't told you.
See, I'm not sure if that's really true, though. I think maybe if you want to focus on Peshasser for a second, which maybe might be a better way to phrase his question. Right? Maybe he should say, oh, no questions about Peshasser. And then we could talk about it, because Migo in general normally means that I have a range of claims, and I assert a claim which might very well be the most basic, obvious claim, but I have better claims.
So
maybe that's a relevant topic to bring up. Now, that's also part of what I want to illustrate here, that the idea that Migo is really something that comes up as a defensive tool. So Pesh Asar, whether that's really the issue here, we saw yesterday, that's a little bit of the question at hand, right? That what's the significance? That essentially, what it boils down to, if we read our Gemara a little bit more specifically, right? Even though the Gemara doesn't really say this straight out, but essentially what comes out of our Gemara is that Rabbi Yeshua distinguishes between a woman who is defending her lack of basula status and a man who claims to own land that he bought from, called him yesterday, Irwin. Irwin claims to own land, and he says he bought it from ancestry, family. So descendants, the descendants of ancestry, they come and they say, well, then give it back to us. And he says, no, it's mine. So there, Yeshua says, he wins, the woman doesn't win. So what's the difference? So the Gemara says the difference is shor shochet, right? That in one case or the other, there's a dead ox. But what we really see here is that the difference is that that case might or might not be amigo, the case of Sula, while this case is a pesh asar case, right? That he brought it up. So the fact that he brought it up, is that the whole significance? Is that the whole key to his winning? If so, Shor Shochet becomes the definition of Pesh Asar, right? Because the Gemara says Shor Shochet is the key, and Pesh Asar might be the key difference. So it comes out that Pesh Asar and Shor Shochet are essentially defining each other. Does that make sense? Right? That's essentially what our Gemara is saying. Oh, what's this case and that case? It's Shor Shochet, but it also seems that Pesh Asar is the difference. Hi.
We're saying that Migo is defensive, so we're saying that Pesha Asar is like a preemptive tool.
So then that's also part of what I want to call attention to, that is Pesha Asar really defensive? Now, maybe it is, because maybe you're right, maybe it's a preemptive defense.
The whole point of Pesha Asar is that he's coming first.
Right, I know that's kind of getting to what I want to get to, that it seems like that itself might be a little bit of a difference between Pesha Asar and Migo. Right, that Pesh Asar seems to have this character as something that you yourself introduce into the equation, and that affects the reason that you're believed, and maybe that's already puts it in a different role than Migo. Shmuley?
If the concept of Pesh Asar takes the fact that he comes first, so don't we already have a concept that someone can't made for themselves to be a rasha, or they can't bring about something bad, so they can't bring this claim about, I don't know if it was Mominus or whatever, but he can't bring this claim on himself, so then theoretically we wouldn't need a Pesha Asar.
Okay, so that's an important question. Let's try to clarify that a little bit. So Pesha Asar, first of all, you're bringing up a number of interesting points. Because Pesha Asar, first of all, should it have, and actually this is a discussion, maybe we'll see it more in the context of Nigo, so should we distinguish between Pesha Asar brought up in different realms of halacha? Right, this Gemara over here is applying it in the context of a monetary dispute, straight mamonis issue. In the first parak, it's the issue where it's not really necessarily being brought up, but it's an issue of money that comes from marital status. So it's a combination of money and other things. In the source that we'll discuss in a second, on Daf Beis, it's really coming from an Eben Ezer context. Right? We'll see that source in a second. So that's already very interesting. Right? Should Pesha Asar have different weight in different cases, in different areas of halacha? Because Shmuley's point is well taken, that there are big differences as far as the role of acknowledgement is concerned. Right? That in terms of Eidus, we're talking about real halachos of testimony. So Eidus is limited as far as who is acceptable, who is not. And Eidus against yourself, if it's going to, for example, give you a Rasha status, so that would be a problem. That would be ineffective. We say, Ein Adam Meisim Atzma Rasha, that we wouldn't accept somebody's testimony against himself in order to give him a Rasha status, which might be related to, and this, by the way, is also very relevant to third parak sugyas, the Kimud the Rabbine issues, but that may be related also to different types of monetary fees. We spoke about this, I think, last week, that on the one hand, we're reading here a lot about knossos, as there are certain monetary penalties that are imposed in a punitive way by Beis Din, which nowadays we don't actually see because our contemporary Beis Din are not empowered to deal with knossos. And you have monetary obligations that are a function of real-world monetary debts. I borrowed money, I damaged something from you, I stole money, I bought something. Those are all what we call mammon as opposed to knas. So the role of acknowledgement is different. That when it comes to a knas, modiv knas is pater. Somebody who comes and acknowledges he owns a knas is exempt from the knas. But modiv b'mammon, if I acknowledge that somebody else has a debt on me, so I owe some money to somebody else, so that's very effective. Hodas bal din k'mei eidim dam. So what Shmuley is asking a little bit, I don't know if this is what you meant to be asking, but I think it's under the surface your question, it's definitely part of what you're asking, is that we have to figure out, in order to know what the whole significance is, what kind of areas of halacha are we talking about? We're talking about simply a case of the monetary case, right? Essentially, if this Gemara about the Sada was the only source that we had, then we could say, look, it's a monetary principle. This guy is a Hodas Bal Din issue against him, because he acknowledged the other guy's claim. So, he's in trouble. We say no, because his credibility in acknowledging the other guy's claim is matched by his credibility in making his own claim. So yes, I acknowledge your family owned it, but I also say I bought it from them, so both statements have equal credibility, so his hodah works in both ways. Right? So this could all be a detail in how hodah's bal din works. But in other areas of halacha, it's not going to have the same type of mechanics to it. And the fact is, we do see even the key source of the Pesha Asar, as we'll discuss in a second, is from a context which is really a very different area of halacha. So how does that fit in? So that's all something to think about. So what did we just see in the past few seconds? We saw that Migo is at least defensive. Now, there could be positions in Rishonim that it can go farther, but at least it's rooted in a defensive type of claim. And Pesha Asar, the way it's used, seems to be, if you want to call it defensive, you have to call it a proactive defense. Right, it's definitely seems to be coming from a sense of initiative from the person making it. So, as we said, we want to try to figure out a couple of things. We want to figure out what Migo is. That we'll talk about more next week. But we'll keep in the back of our minds, right, the basic question of, is Migo about credibility? That we believe you're not lying because you have better lies you could take. And some of the Makoros you saw today that I put on today's list, right, are just there because they talk about that language in terms of Migo, right? You saw that, the language of Arashi here, and Arashbam over there, that Kushta, that the Rashba seems to see it like that, if you saw the Rashba and the Tshuva, right, that it's about believability, that a person who has a better claim is probably not lying when he uses a weaker claim.
But it doesn't that sound like it's not about Kushta Kama? Like,
well, Kushta means truth.
Right? I know, I'm saying it doesn't. It seems like it has to do with how the Dayanim, we talked about this in Miga, how the Dayanim, like, look at the stronger claim. I don't know, I saw a difference there that Rashi said, it seems to say, Rashi seems to say, that we assume that he's speaking the truth, and the Rashi seems to be saying that we assume that he has a stronger claim or more truth. I don't know.
See, that's also interesting, by the way, just to go back for a second to my oral examination question. But, you know, as we'll see also, as part of what we saw yesterday, we didn't get a chance to really go into it. But did I add the Tosfos and Daf Gimel this morning? I remember I put it on. From yesterday, we left off talking about the Ramban. Right? The Ramban said, Shor Shachet is an indication that the Migo was not so good, because you don't really have such great options. In the case of the Psula, she doesn't really have a winning taina. So part of one of the questions I want to figure out about Migo is, Migo just means that you have a better taina that you would win, or any kind of a better taina. Right? Because, let's say, with a case where she's not a Psula. So if she says that she was raped, or if she says that she had an accident, Mukas Aids, so they'll both mean that she's not a Psula, if it happened before the wedding. So neither one is going to get her any more money. So what's the advantage of one over the other? So if you look at Tosfos and Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, I meant to put this on my Makomos if I didn't. So the language of this, a short Tosfos here, Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, let's read to the middle of it. It says, Yesh Lomar Dohasam, in this case of the Psula, Lo Hevi Migo Gomer. It's not really a Migo. Because even if she had said Mukas Eitz, she's not going to win, according to Rabbi Yeshua, through that claim. So the only sense in which it's a Migo is just that this is an easier thing for her to say about herself. Right? She'd rather say that she was a Mukas Eitz than she was raped. So let's say, for example, if I go back my oral Bechina, so let's say if I want to ask somebody, did you go to Shir today? Did you go to Seder? And he could say that he was out helping old ladies cross the street, or he could say that he was out robbing a bank. So neither was particularly relevant in terms of the content of Shir, right? But one makes you into a big Baal Chesed, and one makes you into a bank robber. So is there any kind of Migo logic there that we assume that if you're going to make something up, you'll probably make up the less embarrassing lie? Is that relevant to the whole discussion of Migo? You follow the question, is Migo only about having a better claim that's going to work as opposed to this claim? Or is Migo about any time you're going to lie, you'll lie in a way that's going to be most believable and do you the least damage? So if you're going to lie and say you were robbing a bank, even though that's going to put you in a much worse light than saying you were helping the ladies cross the street, but it's not relevant for Migo purposes because one claim is not going to be substantively different than the other. Alex?
In that case that you mentioned, though, there's not necessarily like a short shot with a benefit kind of situation where like you would necessarily know that like someone wasn't shooting, like you, or wasn't said, or like, so you might argue that if there's an impression on that person to lie, and they, or to tell you the truth, and they say something like that, like I was out helping someone.
You're saying for Rashi's short shot case.
Yeah. So,
depending on how you understand Shor Shachet,
right,
if that's the factor. But what I'm interested in that example just is that when we say you had a better claim, what do we mean you had a better claim? A better claim that's less embarrassing? A better claim that makes you look better? A better claim that's more believable? Does it matter? You know, do we distinguish between betters as far as this is concerned? So all of this is relevant a little bit to trying to understand how Migo works and also how Hapesh also works. So we'll keep in the background the question of how Migo works. That we'll get to more a little bit next week. But the question now of Pesha Asar, is Pesha Asar a function of Migo, or is it something else? And this question, if you want a major Achron who talks about it, The Machne Ephraim talks about it. If you want to look it up, I'll give you the Makar. Machne Ephraim is a classic Achron, Ephraim Navon. So he has a discussion about this, and a lot of later Achronim, if you want, maybe you can send around, if you want to look at the discussion inside, maybe we can send around a copy of it tomorrow. But just as far as classic Achronim bring this up, so what exactly is the nature of Migo? Is Pesh Aser, is Pesh Aser a form of Migo? Or is it something else? Is it that you create the believability, and therefore you create the other half of the believability too? So one place to start is, if you want to know if they're the same or not, is what about sources? Where does each din come from? Right, so you saw probably this morning that what's the source for HaPesh Asar? How do we know it? How do we know this din?
In the Torah.
So the Torah, right? Where is it in the Torah? Or where does the Gemara talk about it? On Daf Chav Beis. Right, Daf Chav Beis, there is a Mishnah. The Mishnah basically lays down the principle. It says Mishnah and Chav Beis and Aleph. We want to look at it together. Ha'isha Sha'amra, Ha'isha Si'ish Ha'isi V'grushani. Let's say a woman claims that she was married. Right? If you have a woman who wants to get married, she comes to Bezdin and she wants to get married. Right? Nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, it's a whole story how exactly you have to establish what they call Ravakut. Right? You have to establish that you're single, so you have to get proof that you're not married to anyone else, proof that you're Jewish, proof that you're not married to anyone else, haven't been married, or you're, if you were married, that you're not married now. So Mishnah talks about this, right? So what happens if a woman comes before Bezdin and she wants to get married, and she happens to claim, by the way, I was married, but I'm divorced. So she's giving both pieces of information. Aisha Shamra, Aisha Sisha Yisi, Vigrushani. So should we believe her that she's divorced? We don't have two Adams saying she's divorced. We only have this woman saying about herself that she's divorced. So should we believe her? So says the Mishnah, Nemenes, Shapesha Asar, Hu Hapesha Hitir. The same person who told us she's married is the same person who told us she's divorced. But if there were Adim, the people around who were at the wedding, maybe they are the Adim from the wedding, and they said, listen, we were there, she's married. And we don't have anything like that saying that she's divorced, so it's just her word against the Adim, then that becomes a problem. Then we don't have a basis to say she's single. Similarly, Amra Nishbesi Vitaharani, Namenas Shapesh Asu Apeshi Hitir. If a woman claims that she was held captive, so we have an issue. When a woman is held captive, so we're afraid that maybe she was raped, maybe she should be a surah to a Kohen, for example. So what if the whole source that we have that she was ever taken captive in the first place is from her? She comes and says Nishbesi, and then she also says Tahora. So then Namenas Shapesh Asu Apeshi Hitir, Vimesh Eidim Shinishbesi, Yomaris Taharani, Ainin Namenas. But if she has Edim, so then that's going to be a problem. The Edim against Edim that she was taken captive, and not that, she was, so she's Tahara, it's going to be a problem. But if there are Edim, the Mishnah adds another din here, which addresses a different point, which we won't talk about right now. Fine. So this case of Pesha Asar in the Mishnah is really a very different context than what we were just talking about. Right, like Shmuley was bringing up, this is a Evan Ezra case. Right, we're talking about the case where you really need two Edim. Right, this is Alpi Shnayim Edim Yakum Davar, the whole case where the Torah says that you need two Edim to establish something. This is the kind of stuff we're talking about. It's a big machlokas. We talk about, in general, there are different categories in halacha of terms of Edis. So you have monetary issues. You have isurin. You know, if you want to know if food is kosher or not. So how do you know you can trust your mother when she tells you the food is kosher? Right, so one answer is, there actually are a couple of possibilities, but the most common possibility, the most likely possibility is eidah adam and bisurin. Right, that the testimony of one eid is accepted when it is a matter of Issa v'Heter, a matter of Yoridea. So you want to know if the food is kosher, so your mother says kosher, so she is Nemenes. And it sounds like Erecha means, it doesn't just mean one versus two, but it means all of the rules of Edus don't really apply. It doesn't have to be males, etc., etc. That's how most Rishonim assume, that it can be Erecha Nemen Bisurin, doesn't have to be a man, doesn't have to be somebody who's kosher for an edus of two edus. It means it's a whole different level of edus. Now, in general, you need two edim for monetary points, and also for what we call davar shebe'erba. So what is a davar shebe'erba? So it's a big machlokas what a davar shebe'erba is, a lot of different possibilities. But it sounds like it's, the phrase sounds like it means things that are related to arayos. So, you know, marriage and divorce certainly affect arayos. Others understand it, things that affect personal status. If you're talking about a person, so then we're going to need two edim for that. So this is a davar shebe'erba. She's saying she's single when she could have been married, so it seems to be a davar shebe'erba. And here, this is believed, even though we don't have edim one way or another. So that's a big thing, right? That's different than, you could have thought this is really different from our earlier Gemara, which is talking about a mamonis case. Or the first parak Gemara, which is talking about ksuba, which we saw the little bit itself, a little bit of a question. The chi of ksuba, we're also not really 100% sure, parenthetically. Let's just introduce this into the mix. How exactly a ksuba should be adjudicated is a little bit ambiguous too, because how would you treat a ksuba, right? A shayla of a ksuba, what category should it be in? Right, the categories we just mentioned, is it a monetary issue? Is it a davar shebe'erva issue? Is it something else? Sorry? I didn't hear him say. Monetary. So on the one hand, it seems monetary, because we're talking about a chov between two people. Right now, issues in the ksuba could have all kinds of other nafkaminas, but at least as far as the monetary question, right, it seems like she's coming, she wants 200 mana, he's saying, I owe you 100 mana, it's a monetary issue.
The Torah seems to disagree.
Who disagrees?
The Torah.
Okay, how?
Ebenezer,
oh, puts ksuba as an Ebenezer. Yeah. Okay, so that's an interesting question. That, you know, that how far you go with that, so that doesn't have to bother us so much. The interesting thing is why Ribbis is in your day. That's a whole separate discussion. But yeah, certainly Ksubas is in Ebenezer. That it doesn't have to surprise us so much because it's certainly rooted in the whole marriage relationship. But you could say, okay, that fact is given more significance. So if you really want to read a lot into it, let's say, okay, but the Ksuba only comes because of the reality of the marriage. And therefore, it's an Ebenezer question. It's a status question. It's going about Psula, it's going not Psula, Almana, Grusha, a whole story, so it's really an Erva issue. Or you could say it's actually less than Mammon, right? We discussed a few days ago, we talked about Modim Mixus and Shibud. So we saw there a possibility that really a Ksuba is monetary, but maybe we should say it's less than monetary. It's not that there's a real chov between him and her, but it's basically a mitzvah. Chazal made a mitzvah to pay so that you shouldn't get divorced too easily. And it's not really a monetary chov at all. Right? The whole concept of the way we've seen ksuba in our introductory discussion, that there's an isser to live with your wife without a ksuba, right? Even if she doesn't care, it seems. Right? It's not really about a monetary debt between the two. It's about a mitzvah that Chazal have put on. So maybe it has different rules completely. So there's a lot of ambiguity as to what the rules should be here, and the idea that Pesha Asar or anything like that transfers back and forth so easily is itself interesting. Now the Gemara goes on to say something that's even more Ebenezer, or at least as Ebenezer. So the Gemara asks, Omer Vasi, Minayin Shapesha Asar, Hu HaPesha Hitir Min HaTorah. How do we know that the Halacha of HaPesha Asar is true min haTorah? Shenamar SVT nasati li shaze. Lisha, right? So the pasuk says, "I have given my daughter to this man as a wife." Where's that from? What's the context of that? Sorry, Motzi Shemra, right? So we just talked about this. We read in the parasha 2 weeks ago, and we talked about it since then. And the whole context of Motzi Shemra, so this woman is married and the husband claims that she's not a psula, and the father comes to plead her case and says, my daughter I've given Liish Hazeh. So says the Gemara, Liish Asra, that when he says, I married off my daughter, so his testimony now made her an Ashesish. So you might say, okay, now the whole world is prohibited to her, including this guy, because we know she's an Ashesish, we don't know who. We don't know who the husband is. So, Hazeh. Because he says Hazeh, so then he says it's mutter to this guy. So the same authority who told us that she's usher to everybody else tells us that she's mutter to this husband.
He's the only authority.
Sorry?
We're assuming that he's the only authority on that?
Well, he seems to be the only source that she's married in the first place. Yeah, I mean, it could be that there were other Edom around who said otherwise. Right, that's true. It sounds like, from the way the Gemara is reading it, that he's the whole source of the information that she's usher in the first place. Hi.
You might have just asked this, but the context doesn't seem relevant. He's not actually making her usher or mutter to anybody, right? There's no...
Well, he is, though, because first he declares her married, so he made her usher.
This is already when they're getting a divorce or something.
Is when they're claiming Moshe Shemra.
When he's claiming Moshe Shemra. So everyone's admitting to a marriage having taken place, etc. It seems like it's a narrative portion of the father claiming that I married her to this man isn't actually affecting anything. It's just introducing, I don't know, the facts that we already know. Doesn't it seem that way from the context of the
You say without the Gemara's emphasis on
it. I mean, the Gemara is blurring out the Isha Zeh. But in the context of the actual children themselves, it doesn't seem shot that he's actually making it.
Except that, you know, what if she didn't admit to the whole thing? Now, what would give her an HSH status? If all we know is this guy's claim.
The husband's claim.
Yeah, we wouldn't have any evidence that she has an HSH status. Now, the father has Nemanis. That's what the Gemara's going to go on to say a little more about. But it's the father's Nemanis that also gives her the Heter status. So that, the Gemara says, that's the source for HaPesh also. So you could ask, all right, if Pesha Asar is Migo, if it is, so what's the source for Migo?
This.
Maybe. Right? So it's not clear what the source for Migo is.
Yeah, it's, Migo.
Where does Migo come from?
Yeah, but why would this be Migo?
Well, so in general, why would this case be Migo?
Yeah, no.
Right? Well, you say, I guess, if you talk specifically about his case, I guess if you would say to him that... if the conversation went further and you say that, oh, I think that your daughter is actually usher to the whole world and we can't even clear this up because we don't know who's going to give her a get or anything like that because we don't know who the husband is. So he'll say, no, that I have nemanis to say that it's this guy because I could have said it was never married, she was never married in the first place. So you could phrase it in a way that would put it in an amigo kind of context. But it's an interesting question to ask because I was just thinking from a different place that does Migo have its own source? So, first of all, is Migo Daraisa? Probably yes. So, most of the Rishonim seem to assume that it is. There are some Rishonim, there's a Ravid and a Meiri, that seem to say Migo is Darabana, which then would put Pesha Asar apparently in a whole different category. But most Rishonim assume that Migo is Daraisa, and then probably also distinguish between the two.
So if the Nigamar concludes that Pesha Tavash there isn't?
Sorry?
The Nigamar concludes that Pesha Tavash there is a Sarah, is that not what there is?
So, right, so that's the question. So that also still makes this the Mucker, though. Right. You know, that this makes this whole Sugya the Mucker. Where this Sugya is from the Sarah or from the Pasuk, but it makes it something independent of Nigo,
right.
It seems like.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right, so whether it's the Svara or the Pasuk, it sounds like it's its own din. Now, Migo, how does that fit in? It's not clear, because Migo, see, the Gemara, the Rishonim seem to assume that it's Daraisa. If you look, for example, Tosfos and Daf Yud Ches and Ksuvos, right, in the between our Daf, and we just quoted here. So here, talking about the whole question of Modim Mixas, which we'll say a little bit more about next week. So there's two Tosfos in here that seem to assume that Migo is Daraisa. If you look, for example, just take one line out of context, in Tosfos Rabbi Elazar, so just without going with the whole concept of Tosfos, it says that Meshav Aveda, what this Tosfos is talking about, part of me Daraisa mitam Migo. It calls Migo Daraisa here. While Tosfos, Bipnei Ma, Tosfos talks about why this whole din of Kofar Bakol, why we need a pasuk to say that a modem mixas is chayiv shvu and a kofar bakol isn't. So Tosfos asks that the question is asked even though you could say that ma'ilu mehemim below shvu b'migo, why shouldn't a kofar bakol be believed without a shvu just because of migo? Di ba'i kofar akol. If he wanted to, he could have taken the better tanya of denying everything. Or you could say, Dinelef Mihacha, Deloam Rina Migo. Or you could say that we could have learned from this context that we don't apply Migo to the whole thing. So the whole assumption seems to be that Migo is a din daraisa, and we have to figure out how other dinim interact with it. Yes?
If Migo is a daraisa, and we assume that Pesha Aser is a type of Migo, what is the purpose of finding a Torah source for Pesha Aser?
Exactly, that's the question. Right, so it sounds like that from the whole looking of a source, right, it sounds like Pesha Aser and Migo are two different dinim. However, one could say, but no one actually tells us too clearly what the source for Migo is. So it's a little bit of an ambiguous point. So you could say that maybe the source actually is the same source. So if you saw the Rashba in his tshuva, right, the Rashba says that this whole idea of mali l'shaker, of why should I lie when I could have a better lie, so he quotes the pasuk of SBT Nasati Lishazet. So it could be that there is some ambiguity here, that maybe they all do share one source, they're all one din, or one's the Rabbana, one's the Raisa, an unlikely possibility, or they're the Raisa from different sources. Now, if Migo is the Raisa and it's a different source, we don't know what the source is. So it could be that this is a Svara. Right? It could be that maybe Migo is such a rock solid kind of Namanas that it's essentially true on a level daraisa, without needing any extra source, meaning it's saying that it's already embedded in the din daraisa of Nemanis, doesn't require anything more. Which is itself interesting. So this question of the source could be relevant to asking whether Migo and Tepesh Asar are the same din or not. So how else could you figure out whether they are the same din or not? Right, so you could say, just in terms of texts, maybe it's machlokus rishonim. Right, we mentioned yesterday that our daf and daf tazayin, so we find Migo and Pesha Aser are kind of thrown about interchangeably. Right, it seems like they're being used as the same thing. We mentioned you could ask a little bit that maybe it's just a linguistic use, maybe it's just an expression. Migo doesn't always mean that it's the halachic concept of Migo. So we see some ambiguity there. Rashi confuses us maybe a little bit more, the Rashi about Shor Shochet, because on the one hand, we said that Rashi emphasizes a different understanding than Tosfos. On the other hand, Rashi uses the word Migo too. So you could question the whole thing. The Tosfos in Bava Kamma, right, in Dafayin Beis, you get to see that in the Mamre Kolos. Right, Tosfos there really seems to explicitly see the two concepts as different. So, how else might we try to gauge the difference? We see how we have Rishonim who will just say one or the other that they're the same or they're different. And you'll have a question of sources and a question of the logic behind them. What other clues will tell you whether they're the same or they're different? If we want to figure out if two dinim are operating the same way or if they're different, how else can we try to figure it out? Nafkaminas, right? Are there differences? Lahalachish, what do you want to say? Where we find what?
Where we find them in the application.
Right. So if you find nafkaminas, if we find differences between them, so that might show that there is a difference between the two. So you do find some Rishonim who and some Achronim who say differences. So for example, the Ramban in Baba Basra, I didn't put this on yet, I didn't think you would necessarily get up to it. But the Ramban says in Baba Basra, I don't think I put it on this. Ramban says in Baba Basra that Migo does not work against certain types of rov, certain types of chazakas, such as, for example, not just mukhsa chazakas, but default premises. So, for example, Einodon Pareya Tov Zmana. Right? Do we say that a person is not believed if a person claims that he paid back a loan, he doesn't have any proof, but he says he paid it back, and the loan wasn't due yet. So he claimed he paid it back at an earlier time. So we have a premise that that's never going to be the case, that people don't do that, they don't pay back money before they have to. So you're not going to be believed if you say that you paid back earlier. So the Ramban says, Migo doesn't work for that. The Pesha also does work. So that seems to suggest a difference. Rabbis Kolchanan, word from our sponsors. Yeah.
Sorry. So the Ramban's case, the Ramban, the case would be that the person who took the loan comes to the court, comes and claims that he took a loan, but that he paid it early, and that's the way to get out of it.
That would be believed. Yeah. That basically it sounds like if his whole reason to think he owes anything is because he comes in says so, but he also says together with that that I paid it back right away. So then, even though we normally wouldn't take that for granted, we wouldn't say that a person should be believed when he says he paid back early. But here, the Pesha Asar is going to have nemanis is going to outweigh that, while amigo wouldn't necessarily outweigh that. Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan goes further than that, so we're going to discuss next week the question of whether you say migo lahotzi or not, whether we say that migo can work against the chazaka. So Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan, who I think I mentioned the other day, he has a whole section on kol migo, like many achronim do. They have large sections of their writings devoted to the rules of migo. So Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan writes that migo cannot be motzi min hamuchzak, but Hapesh Asar can. So that seems to indicate that Migo and Pesh Asar are different. Right, Shmuley?
It could imply that they're different, but it could also just imply that it's still imply that Hapesh Asar is the type of Migo.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't have to mean they're separate, it just means that it's related.
Oh. So very good. That's what I was going to say next. Right, so it would seem to indicate on the surface that they're different if they're different roles. But then Shmuley refutes that or objects to that very correctly that maybe not. Right, maybe it does operate from a place of Migo. But who says all Migos are equal? Right, couldn't you say that Migo, especially as we've been seeing the past few days, that all these questions of Nemanis have to do with adding up points. So maybe not all Migos are equal. Right, if this is a Migo, we'll call it a Migo, Migo di boy shasik. Right, that if you wanted to, you could have not said anything, you could have been quiet, you could have been shosek. So the fact that you talked instead of being shosek, that's a Migo, you should be believed. So one could easily argue that this is a super Migo. Right, these are the kind of cheshbonus that we'll see more next week, we have to try to keep in mind. Because there's all kinds of things flying in the air, there's all kinds of moving parts, and we try to figure out nemanis. Right? So we try to figure out, does a migo work? So one question might be, is migo even relevant? Right? Another question might be, is this really a migo? Maybe it's not a migo for whatever reason. Like we talked about migo de ha'aza, just to give an example for each case. Right? So if you want to talk about whether a migo can be motzi min hamuchzak. So the question might really be, is Migo even relevant? We started off today saying Migo is largely a defensive tool, according to a lot of Rishonim. So Migo might only enter the discussion when I'm defending my territory, not when I'm trying to get something from you. So that might just mean Migo might not be relevant. Right? Or you might say that, let's say, a Migo of Ha'aza, with a Kofar Bakol, where a person is too embarrassed to say something like, I didn't borrow any money from you at all. When he borrowed something. So there, the issue with amigo is that the amigo might just not really be there because the other possibility might not be available. So we have all kinds of different questions with amigo. Is amigo relevant? Is it actually amigo? Now you might also ask, is amigo powerful enough? That amigo up against something else, how many points does each one get? Does amigo have enough power to win over another claim? So maybe it depends. Maybe not all Migos are created equal. So maybe you could say that a Migo di boy shosik, is what Shmuel is getting at, is that that's a Migo when it's a better Migo. And that's what was alluded to a little bit even in Rashi, right, about his Rashi's Shor Shocha Lefanecha. I said, when somebody comes and claims, says something to you, and says, you owe me money, so then you're on the defensive. You got to say something. So already, your credibility shrinks a little bit. Because the fact that you have to say something, it gives a little bit less significance to your choice of claim. But when you had the option of saying nothing, if that was something that you could have done, and you still chose to speak, Right? So then we count that as even more significant. Even though the lawyers in American court will tell you the other way around, right? That they usually advise their clients to take the fifth and to not testify in their own defense because they assume that once you start testifying, you're going to get yourself in more trouble. But here we might say that if you don't have to testify, and you do testify, if you don't have to say anything, you say something, so then we should make that a super credibility point. So that's essentially what Shmuley is saying, is that maybe there are differences, not because it's not Migo. It's a Migo, but not all Migos are created equal. And this Migo, the Migo of Iboy Shasik, the Migo where you didn't have to open your mouth in the first place, that's perhaps a more powerful Migo than a normal Migo where you're forced to say something and you really just kind of pick a taina that maybe you're just scrambling or maybe you don't realize what your tainas are. It's what Rashi says on our daf, right? That the fact that she had to say something when she's accused of not being a psula, so maybe she didn't realize what other tainas are, maybe she's trying to pull some kind of a scam here. We don't know how much significance to give that to. So then it makes the whole question very difficult to figure out, because even nafkaminas, we don't really know for sure, because nafkaminas might not be because it's a whole different concept, it might be because it's a different degree. So this leaves us in somewhat of an ambiguous place, because we don't really have very solid evidence to figure out one way or another, but it does make a big difference, because Migo essentially would be a principle of namanus, and a defensive principle to say how much your credibility is assessed and affected by the fact that you have better options. While Pesha Asar could theoretically be something else completely, could theoretically be about you are the source for the authority, and therefore you can set the rules, you can set the parameters. Now the truth is, we could also wonder, how does this fit in with the whole discussion of the source? So the Gemara on Daf Chav Beis, which goes back and forth in terms of whether it's a Svara, what's the source, is the Pasuk the source? But also the question is, what is the Pasuk telling us? The Gemara kind of goes back and forth about this. Right? Is the Iker Chiddush of the Pasuk the fact that she's mutter to this guy? Or is the Iker source from the Pasuk the fact that she's Usher in the first place? And then the Heter flows from that. Because it really does seem like the main context of the source is establishing authority. Once she wants to look at the whole nature of the flow of the Gemara, it's that we're establishing who sets the facts in the first place, and therefore everything comes from that. So one could argue, it's certainly arguable, you could go the other way as well, but that the focus of Espiti Nasati Lishazeh, that seems to be addressing authority rather than a Migo kind of structure. And this could have, that itself, that question of whether it's one or the other, could end up having other implications. It's also interesting, there is a machlokas, Rishonim, it's machlokas in the Shulchan Aruch, I don't think I put this on, but we can look it up for tomorrow, is if you look at Evan Ezer and Simon Kufnan Beis, Sivav, so there are 2 days there, quoted in Shulchan Aruch, about whether there is a limitation on Pesha Asar, does it have to be Toch Kedei Dibur? Right, we know that there is a concept of Toch Kedei Dibur, which means that if you say something, there also seems to be a zone in which you can undo it. Not for all purposes, but for certain purposes, l'halacha, you can revoke what you said. So Toch Kedei Dibur is a very short period of time. It's a few seconds. Machlok is 2, 3, 9 seconds. It's a few seconds, as long as it takes to say Shalom Alecha Mori Barabi. So there's a machlokas, 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, about whether Apesha Asar only applies when it's Toch Kedei Dibur. So that's very interesting. Right?
An example being like the father saying, she's Asar to all men, and then he waits a day and comes back and he says, but to this guy, she's married, it wouldn't work.
Correct. Exactly. People. Right? That maybe if they're on two separate occasions, which by separate, we have a very low threshold of separate, we have a few seconds, but certainly if it's two separate occasions, so then maybe this doesn't apply.
Is that kind of crazy? Is that considered revoking when you say it?
So is which considered? If you do it within Tochadib or after Tochadib?
What is the definition?
So let's address that for a second. Tochli Dibor is a period of time 2 to 9 seconds, depending on how you count. A few seconds, as long as it takes to say Shalom Alecha Rabbi Mari. It depends on how warm of a Talmud you are. Right? You say Shalom Alecha Rabbi Mari, so good to see you. Shalom Alecha Mari. So however the minig was among the students, at some short period of time. So, hi.
I would really finish though with the end of the daf.
Okay.
Right. She would fend off men by saying, you know, I'm married right now. Mm-hmm. And then she later on said, I'm not married. And then she said to fend off people.
Right.
And they used this concept to allow her to get married.
Okay, so that's a great question. I want you to discuss that. So the thing is, there's a key element in that story that's a little bit missing. All right, what's the key element? Right, so Batal mentioned that the Gemara goes on to discuss that let's say you have a woman who has claimed she's married. And then later on she wants to get married and she says that she's not married. So
they say if it's a legitimate reason.
So what's Alex emphasizing? That it's not automatic. Right? She has to convince us that it's true. So it's called an amasla. In other words, she has a believable excuse, right? That she doesn't have the right just to reverse it. She has to be able to say, she has to convince us that it was credible that she would have said one thing yesterday and something else today.
But she had longer than 5 seconds or whatever.
Right. So in that case, the fact that she has this amasla, the fact that she can say, the Gemara tells us that the issue was that when she said she was married, she was trying to fend off all these people who she didn't want to hang around with. So it was useful to get rid of that. But now she actually wants to marry somebody else. She finally found Mr. Wright, so now she doesn't want to claim to be married anymore. So if you have a good explanation, it's convincing that, yeah, you would have said this yesterday and something else today, and a reasonable person would have done that because there was a difference. So then, okay, we can believe you. But the implication is without that, then we don't believe her. So that could be true that it's a Tochadei Dibor kind of issue. And the main sources that the Mishnah gives, the cases in the Mishnah and the Pasuk, they really are all Tochadei Dibor. Right, basically, a woman comes and says, "I was a grusha. I was married, but I was a grusha." So it's basically one breath. She's saying, "Yes, I was married, but I'm not married anymore." SBC natati liisha zeh. That's literally tochei dibor. Right? He's saying, "Ish hazeh." It's literally tochei dibor. It's as close as possible as the words could be. That in the same phrase, yes, she's married to this guy. So it could be there is a requirement of tochei dibor. Others disagree. Others say it's limited, but not limited so absolutely. It's limited by as long as you're holding in this discussion. If it could be more, but as long as this topic is on the table, then you can define its parameters. So that's also interesting, because if you say that it's a tochei dibor, the truth is, then it could be a whole different concept. That tochei dibor we find in a couple areas of halacha. Some areas apply, some areas it doesn't apply. But what it seems to be is basically a right of revocation. Right? A right that you can take back what you said. So, and that's not necessarily about credibility. It's about that your words haven't really taken effect yet. Reb Chaim tells, in the Shiurim of Reb Chaim Telzer, so he writes that Tochadei Dibor apparently is a halachic unit of time in which things that happen are identical. Or simultaneous, rather. Things that happen are simultaneous. So, you know, you can always wonder what's considered to be simultaneous. Right? That if you have a micrometer that can divide a gazillimeter, that can divide time into its smallest units, so no two things are happening at the same time. Now, what's considered happening at the same time? Two things happen on the same day? Two things happen at the same hour, the same minute? And how do you define a unit of time? It says if you divide time into gazilliseconds, so no two things happen at the same time. So the chiddush of Tochadei Dibor is when two things happen, Tochadei Dibor, it's as if they happened at the same time. So then it means that this sentence was never said, really. So if that's a requirement for Pesha Asa, it could be that it's really a very narrow idea, that really it's not even about the authority, it's about that it's kilo you didn't say it. And that's a little bit difficult because here we are giving her a grusha status, or we are saying that the field is bought to him. You know, we are taking the whole package. It's not like we erase the first sentence. So it's interesting in this whole question of whether Tochadei Dibor should apply. Again, that's 2 days, and the Rishonim is recorded in Shulchan Aruch.
So like we were saying before, that like it's as if it's happening simultaneously. Like what dictates whether, like, is talking to people like an arbitrary like amount of time, or like what is being affected by the two things being said in this amount of time that means it's going to be considered simultaneously. Like,
so it depends. You know, in some cases, it comes up. For example, in business, mekach u'memkar, you make a deal and you reverse it right away. So there, it's considered to be aborted at the beginning because at the same time you said you're selling, you said you're not selling. You know, so to hear, it could be that if you focus on Tochei Dibur as a requirement, which would be a chiddush in that sense, you're basically saying that it all doesn't play out. So there's a little bit more to say about this, but we have less than Tochei Dibur till Mincha. So maybe we'll add a few more words. So we'll see how long Parsha takes tomorrow. We have a double Parsha tomorrow, so it's a little bit more. Maybe we'll spend a little bit more. Other than that, like we said, Sunday and Monday we'll do Migo. And Tuesday for our early Rosh Hashanah year, we'll do Yana Dioma. So just a quickly, very quickly, we spoke about. So we spoke about the question of, opened up again with a general question of what does Migo do? Is Migo defensive? Is it more than defensive? Is it a claim of Ne'amanus or is it a Koach HaTaina kind of question? Relevant to the question of what Peshasar is Peshasar a form of Migo, a Suffolk and Machin Ephraim and others? And we saw how there's a source for Peshasar. Question of is the source of Migo? Is Migo Deraisa, Drabanan? What's the source for Migo? A lot of confusion about that. And if there are nafkaminas, so what does that tell us? So there are some nafkaminas, at least according to some. We mentioned the Ramban about against certain chazakas, or Psikochanan about being motzim and a muchzak. And then the question is that, but even if they're nafkaminas, it might just mean that it's a stronger Migo, not necessarily that it's not a Migo at all. And then we saw also the question of how that goes into what the source is, the question of Tochdei Dibur, 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, and how all that may affect our future understanding of Migo, which God willing we will pick up with soon. Everyone should have a wonderful day. It should be a day of morning.